It's, you know what I think it is? I think it's chicken shit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they're scared of losing the power that they have, and the Republican Party is betting their souls on Donald Trump.
So that's why when, you know, you do really self-destructive behavior, it's why I encourage that. Because I love you. I'm never going to tell you and be like, hey, I love you. Maybe that thing is not so great for you. No, dude, that's not what love is, bro. That's not what love is.
What up, world? I had to restart my recording.
Beautiful.
Epic pause. Welcome to the 89th episode of the Ameripodcast. Today is Thursday, July 18th, 2019, for those of you listening in the future. Or in the super past, and you brought some weird technology with you, went back in time, who knows?
Like anyways, in the Star Wars universe?
I'll save it for our big tech talk, you know, coming in the future. But today we are going to talk about something entirely different. We're going to talk about fascism. Yeah, very different.
Right. Is it entirely different, though? Mm. Tease for the podcast.
I don't know. Have we ever discussed that on this pod once in the 89 episodes? Mm.
Fascism or how technology can enable fascism?
Fascinating.
I'm sure we talked about that, but I don't know.
This is going to be a great like foundation for that conversation.
Indeed.
Today we have Mr. John Kelly in Colorado, Lakewood area. How are you today, sir?
I am doing well. Doing well. Glad to be back. Sorry we took some time off, guys, but good to be back, listeners.
It is nice to be back. It is nice to hear your voice, as it is yours, up in Evergreen, Colorado. John Anderson, how are you today?
Oh, hey. I am doing well listening to your smooth transitions through this intro.
Thank you.
It's lifting my day.
Well, it's going to lift us right on over to, you named it, Berkeley, California.
Hey.
Tyler Grillo.
What's up? How's it going, friends?
Yep, the gang's all here. Gang's all here.
Yeah, we got the OG crew in the house. Mm-hmm. And soon to come, some more guests, some exciting new guests, and some cool discussions. So thanks for tuning in. Keep listening. And we're going to jump right into it. And I guess I should introduce myself. I'm your host, Blake Mannion. Hello. It's me.
The guardrails.
The host with the most.
Who wants to tell us about Trump's little rally that happened last night? I was not fortunate enough to watch it.
So, yeah, I didn't watch it either because I don't want to contribute to the ratings of fascism.
No, me neither.
This fascism rally will unfortunately be televised. Yes, so this whole thing got lit off when Trump tweeted, I quote, this was July 14th, so 4 days ago. So interesting to see, quote, progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, how loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States the greatest and blah, 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 and I don't want to dignify the rest. Anyways, he told four U.S. citizens to go back to their countries.
Right. Three of which that are born here, one's a naturalized citizen.
So that's, like, important. Now, I don't know if this is correlated at all, but these women happen to be women of color, and so
is this correlated? Interesting.
I don't know. I'm just gonna throw that little factoid in.
I'm gonna say yes.
So then, our dear Supreme Leader had a rally last night in Greenville, in which there was a chant: "Send her back." In reference to Ilhan Omar, congresswoman from Minnesota, And Trump seemed to rather relish in it, although today he has backed off of it and said, I would try and stop it if it happened again, and I actually blah, 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 and he's been gaslighting about it today. So we are particularly concerned about this rally because Send Her Back and the things around it are a fairly good – we, I think – to speak for the podcast, believe this is a notable step in the fascist tendencies of some of our government and some of our populace.
I agree. It uses pretty usual language in terms of how white supremacists in the United States talk about immigrants and people of color. It's a very often used trope. Go back to your country. You don't like our country, just go back to yours and fix yours, right?
Yeah.
Something that it's been said for hundreds of years in this country.
Which many can we different just ethnic the... groups.
But it's still around. And what I think before we get too much bore into just the language itself, I want to say that what scares me most is that this is the beginning of the actual election season, really, for Trump. And it's a scary thing to think about, that if this is how it's stoking the flames with his supporters already now, that it's going to get very ugly between now and the election next, November.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can we just quickly note how ironic it is to have people who fly Confederate flags telling people to go back to their country?
Yes.
Very, very ironic. And as Kelly pointed out, that sentiment of go back to your country has been used for hundreds of years. And also, like, yeah, just to name some, like, a key moment is, like, during school segregations and integration in the South, they would stand mm-hmm. outside and chant, go back to Africa. Like, I mean, it's been a consistent thing too, right? So it's not like, oh, we forgot about it at Cape Bay. It's like, no, it's been a consistent.
Yeah, I mean, not to interrupt you, Tyler.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I grew up knowing that that is something that you don't say.
Yeah.
Like, that is racist.
Yeah.
Historically in the U.S., it has been a through line. The very meaningful difference between now and the rest of American history is that sentiment is backed by the power of the presidency.
Yeah,
right.
And that's where it becomes super scary, because typically this has been a minority force in our country that sways politics towards the right, but they had no real power. You saw this with, like, George Wallace or Joseph McCarthy, but they never became president, and they never used it to as a political cudgel. And so that's where, because I think some listeners might be like, oh, well, then if this is typical for the U.S., what should we be worried about? The thing that's scary is this is now backed by institutional power.
Yeah.
much more blatantly than we've seen in the past. I would say that in some ways in the past, it absolutely was backed by authority, both at the state and federal level. But it's the first time in our lifetimes, for sure, that we've seen it so blatantly on a national stage. And I'd also like to say, I loved the irony comment, John. It's doubly ironic. It just drips of irony that it's also the same people telling them, fix your own country if you don't like it, and all these people are American citizens.
Yeah.
Well, it's triple irony dripping, because unless you're an indigenous person, all of us are from. If you follow those fucking rules, yep, none of us are from this country. So
yeah, just go watch the movie Gangs of New York.
Yeah. So what's important about this also is that if it just watch Gangs of New York. Wow, what a reference. I think what's important about this is to then really to dig a little bit deeper into it for people, because you have to follow the thing. Okay, so if you're saying go back to your country, but we're all immigrants, that doesn't actually make any sense. So what are you actually saying? You're telling not white people to go back to their country, which is exactly what they were doing, which is why it's extremely racist, right? So that's like, you got to follow it to the end, because some people are like, well, what do you mean? I mean, You're like,
when you set up an extreme othering of groups of people just because they don't look or believe like you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And
we're not here to completely just degenerate, right, the ideals of the United States or the history of the United States. But it's important to know that this is a very real thing that has happened throughout our history, that there's always been groups of power that have felt threatened by new immigrant populations, changing demographics, and have reacted this way time after time. It's a pretty clear cycle, actually, when you look back.
I think it's really important to know that history, because I think despite all of the horror of the past, we can see some progress there. And so, like, I think that you can tell that story, and Barack Obama was the master at this, of telling the complexity of the story, acknowledging the horrors of it, while still ultimately making it a story of optimism. Yeah. And that is where, that is to me, like, where my red, white, and blue heartstrings just flutter. And, like, I'm so into that story of America, the more perfect union story of America. And that's what I find so abhorrent about Make America Great Again, because it's so antithetical to, like, the way I view progress and time. It's no, we're going forward. We're making things better in the future. That is our mission as, like, ordained from the founders. And you're saying, no, we're taking everything back. And to me, that is a fundamental betrayal of the founding of the country and the ideals that you can trace from the founding to the Civil War, to the Civil Rights Movement, to Barack Obama. That is a through line that Donald Trump is trying to completely strike out. And that, to me, is one of the most abhorrent things about this entire madness that we're in.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's lots of articles obviously been published about the rally last night, but there's one by the HuffPost that I believe is titled Trump held a fascist rally in Greenville.
A fascist Trump rally in Greenville.
Greenville. There you go. You know, good on HuffPost, that fucking leftist, radical leftist. I mean, they are more to the left for sure, but
no doubt.
Yeah, and they're pretty blatant about it. But good on them for calling it what it is. But one of the things that they do is in that article is they interview or they get some quotes from people who, you know, study fascism. And, you know, it's important because some people are like, you're just calling people fascists. And I'm like, have you ever read anything about fascism? Do you know anything about it? Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is?
Yeah.
No, but I do know that Democrats want to take my guns.
So, so that's all I need to know. Well, often fascist governments also want to take your guns. But besides the, that is beside the point.
You can't mention that. No.
But the piece that I think is like important there is, I mean, obviously we should all do our own reading and research about these things. And the people who do this for a living, who, you know, understand this, who study this sort of thing as like for a living and write books on it, they understand because there are patterns. That's why there's a name for the thing, because there are patterns to it. And then we are like, hey, look, something's happening. Let's have a word to refer to it as something. And then hence there are patterns. You can look at other things and go, hey, does this fit the pattern? And if it fits the pattern, then that's what that thing is, right? So what's happening, and these people who are experts were like, yes, this fits the pattern. And in fact, it's scary because it's a new it's increasing. It's a new level. We've been, you know, people have been talking about this since Trump started his campaign in 2015. Have been like, he's using fascist rhetoric, he's doing these tactics, and it has continued to escalate. And these scholars are basically saying this is an even higher escalation, you know. And he's holding a rally, which we actually are getting into election season, but he's been holding rallies not during election season.
Also point out that he filed for re-election the day after inauguration, so that he could start bringing in campaign
financing,
so he could start fundraising, so that he could then turn around and book venues of his own for these types of rallies, so that it goes back into his pocket. Turns out it's a fucking Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, yep. Fucking crook. He's a fucking crook.
Yep.
Yeah, Yeah, but I mean, you're totally right, Tyler. It's amping up, and that's why I was excited to see the debate and the reaction that happened in the House over kind of condemning Trump over the tweets before the rally happened. And for your listeners, hopefully you were following it as well. But it got a little lively between the Democrats and the Republicans when it came to that debate on the House floor. And you look at it and, you know, I consider myself to be a left-leaning person that's in the middle on, tries to be in the middle on a lot of things. But the response by Republican lawmakers on this is just... it's abhorrent. It really is. To borrow your word, John, it really is.
You know what I think it is? I think it's chicken shit.
Yeah. 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 They're scared. They're scared of their constituencies. They're scared of losing the power that they have. And the Republican Party is betting their souls on Donald Trump.
I cannot remember. I was just walking past the television and heard this on MSNBC. Anyways, I can't remember the source of this, but this guy was saying he was texting with a Republican congressman and was like, why are you not condemning this racist attack? And the text message he got back was the primary filing deadline day plus one. So it is, I'm going to keep my fucking mouth shut until I know I don't have a primary challenger, and then I'll say something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about having no fucking backbone. Talk about having moral values whatsoever. No fucking moral compass.
Yeah, this is not a time to play politics. You know, I mean, like, sure. I mean, we all know politicians are going to play politics, whatever they do. It's hence the politics.
The thing is that it's such a fundamental challenge to what the United States is supposed to be about and our set of values and our structures and our institutions that we have is that the Republicans... most of them could still get reelected. They could run someone else, kick Trump out. They could probably still win the national election anyway, just because how voting is in a lot of states. If they could convince a couple states to not go for Trump, they could probably still win, but they're too scared to do that.
Yeah. Yep.
How do you guys feel about that? Did anybody catch that op-ed in the New York Times? I'm trying to remember the author, but she was basically saying that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, was like the perfect catalyst to get Trump reelected.
It's not a bad argument when you look at how she polls for a lot of places in America.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's easy to throw out things.
Anderson? I am sympathetic to that argument. I understand it intuitively. I think it is for sure correct in 1996. But I don't know. We might be living in a time where there is no more political middle, and the only thing that matters is political mobilization. And she's probably on net a better mobilizer for the left than she is the right. Although I think reasonable people could disagree about that. I think ultimately, and then here's another thing, is Republicans are going to find their AOC anyways. Like, we have seen this with Barack Obama. Barack Obama was like the most moderate. Think about this. We put up Merrick Garland, who is the most nominatable Supreme Court justice in the world, and Mitch McConnell didn't even give him a hearing. So, like, I don't think we should be chasing around Republicans trying to get to, like, the moderate. I think we should just do our own thing and try and win the argument.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's happening that I want to mention is just, like, you know, all of this is an ideological battle for what the United States is and what, like, what we're doing here. Like, what we're doing here is a culture, you know? So like, you know, I understand it's like, okay, she's like too, like maybe too far left, but it's also like, it's like, well, but she's saying all the things that many people think are needed, and she's putting forward policies that a lot of people agree with. And of course, a lot of people also disagree with those things. And it can be like, oh, well, yeah, like, see, this, she's part of the Democratic Party and these things. But it's also like, yeah, that's what the Democratic, a lot of people on the left want to be. And so I think that it's hard because what I don't like about that argument, Blake, is that people have been using that argument forever, saying,
yeah, that's a white left, moderate argument. Far,
and look where we are. We've done nothing but go further and further right. Everyone are saying, be more moderate, be more, you know, you can't be too far. And what's happening in that conversation? We are just going further and further, further right. So I don't think, I think that's been proved patently false because we have been going to the middle. Hillary fucking Clinton, you know? I mean, like, there are so many times that the Democratic Party has been like, okay, let's do that thing. And it's not working.
But yeah, I agree with all of that, but I also think that we cannot, it is possible to swing too far the other way. We need to, like, have a message and have policies like the minimum wage that I think can speak to both the inner city, quote unquote, and rural poor, which by that I mean like white and black and white and minority poor people, yeah. Right?
Kelly, were you trying to get a word in?
I was, but I was going to wait for John to finish his point.
Cool, I was just going to call him a fucking statist. Fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the conversation is spot on. I would argue that reading a lot of the policies from AOC, I don't think she's that far left as a lot of people make her out to be. It's more of the system that Tyler's talking about, because the Republican Party has gone so far right, and because the Democrats basically have to be this all-encompassing party of everybody in the middle all the way to the far left, even people in the middle right all the way to the far left, that now someone who's kind of center to maybe a little left within the Democratic base and discussion within the Democratic Party seems like an extreme to a lot of people.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a real issue when you have a party that represents a very small amount of the actual population and the actual viewpoints within a country holds so much power. You have to question whether or not a really representative democracy is established and whether or not we are living in something where real change can happen to bend to a people's will, right? Because really what you're looking at is the minority running the country.
Yeah, I think we might be giving land too much votes in the Senate.
Yeah.
So maybe we should bring in like DC and Puerto Rico and some other shit and let's balance it out a little bit.
Yeah. Can I title this song that also really gets my goat?
Yes.
On like the on terms of fascism. So this is this I'm gonna say something and this is fascist and I people would be like, what do you mean? And I'm gonna tell you what I mean. America, love it or leave it. That fucking thing, which there are people, if you read this article, there are people wearing t-shirts and
that's
shit.
That's fascist.
That's fucking fascist. The idea that, like, the government and the country is infallible is a fucking fascist ideology. Pure and simple. Yep. There's no, like, that's the thing. The motherland, all that shit, the fucking Aryan nation, that shit, that's the thing. It's like, oh, this is the perfect society, and we... And, like, we just need to, like, get the people out who are not part of the perfect society, and that will solve our problems. That's a fascist ideology. Also, you know, you guys, you know, we've all been friends for a while. You know me, dude. I love you guys so much. So that's why when, you know, you do really self-destructive behavior, it's why I encourage that. Because I love you. I'm never going to tell you and be like, hey, I love you. Maybe that thing is not so great for you. No, dude, that's not what love is, bro. That's not what love is. Love is just enabling for somebody, regardless of what they're doing, is destroying them or not. So, you know.
Great. You really took us on a journey there, man.
Great description. Yeah. Couldn't be more spot on. Couldn't be more spot on. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, Tyler.
Wow.
For taking us down that road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I'm like tired from that journey.
Sorry, I just been. But eat me up inside. Had to get it out the mouth hole.
John, Kelly?
I was going to say that I was glad, John, that you brought up the minimum wage and what it could do for people that are confirmed Republicans and people who are outside of really an understanding of the system, what it could do to bring them sort of back towards reality, I think, a little bit. The yeah. poor rural poor.
Yeah, so and it's a, I think it's a mitigation for automation, which I think is incredibly important. Yang Gang, UBI life. So yeah, although
yeah, get the boot off the throat, man.
I will say, just to be, you know, the conservative liberal. Sure. I don't feel great about just doing like a blanket 15 minimum wage. I am sympathetic to like rural communities where that might not make as much sense as it does in like Manhattan.
Absolutely. It's a very good point.
So like, I would love if we were able to tie it to the cost of living, and that way it would be we would be able to change the amount of that wage per year to keep up with things like inflation and the change of cost of living in certain communities. Yeah. And so that, that might even mean that you get more than $15 in some communities, but I would like it to be a little bit more, let's say like regionally means based. But that being
also,
said,
it's also more, it's also that way. It's more of a community policy. Everybody yeah. buys into it, right? In communities yeah. where the higher standard of living, you need more to subsist on a minimum wage, right? Mm-hmm. Versus yeah. rural community where you need less, right?
Yep.
It's that everybody's coming together and agreeing that, yeah, people need help. And, you know, there's not always going to be jobs that will support people and support families the way that the wealth of the United States should support.
I think the goal of the one of the major goals of the United States government is to create a economic environment and a societal environment where if you work 40 hours a week, no matter what you're doing, you can afford a middle-class life. And we should be making economic policies that get us closer to that ideal. And I think that this ultimately gets us there. Closer, anyways. I mean,
yeah. And I mean, I hate to sound too much like a socialist, because I don't consider myself like a socialist by any means. But when you look at it, you're like, yeah, okay. So a billionaire can buy two more yachts, or 400 families could feed themselves for a year.
Oh yeah, no, and I have. Like, I
it's,
mean,
it's pretty. It's I'm pretty a- simple mathematics at that point.
Yeah, there's no reason to have over $1 billion. I think that you should have 100% of your income, personal income, taxed over $1 billion. You should be able to win the capitalism game, get to $1 billion, and then you're done, and then we're going to feed poor people.
Yeah.
And then you get a car that lets you buy whatever you want.
Yeah, you get to be a billionaire, because what is the marginal difference between $1 and $2 billion?
It's nothing.
It's nothing. No practical reason. And then you put that up against like, yeah, this kid like can't afford their insulin.
Yeah.
And so fuck off. We're going to tax you at 100% of your income over $1 billion.
I think in like overall increasing wages is extremely important. And like, but it's more complex. However, maybe there'll be great intents and consequences. Think about it. If we increase the minimum wage to 15, wouldn't that then inflate the dollar, destabilize the world economy, and then capitalism would collapse? Yes! Victory!
And then we revert to like feudalism in Europe.
Now, dude, it's
and
a that's... communist conspiracy, John.
No, the communist conspiracy is technology and automation, and then we get the UBI, and then it's communism, and then everybody wins. We got to go forward, not backwards.
I like it. I like it. How about this one? If a universal basic income is put across the board, it increases our rate of consumption and increases our CO2 outputs, increases our effect on the environmental biomes we live in, and we just kill the planet faster. How about that one?
It would definitely increase the CO2 outputs, because then I would just work less and smoke more weed, and then the CO2 from the weed.
Kelly, the way you deal with that is you target a bunch of bad behaviors and you tax the fuck out of them like a carbon tax, and so then you take the price of gas up to like $5 a gallon, and then you reimburse American families with that tax, and so that way you de-incentivize a lot of bad behaviors.
You would think that the party,
if you put both in at the same time, though, you put a UBI in and those taxes in on the same time, won't the poorest classes still be dealing with basically the same amount of purchasing power?
Relative to rich people, probably not, because we're going to means test all of the syntaxes. So no. Because
Kelly, John's whole argument is null and void because he said we need to go forward, not backwards, and time is a flat circle, so that's impossible.
Mic drop.
Boom. Yeah.
And that's the end of the podcast forever. That was the last episode. Sorry.
Boom. All minds are split.
Listen to this episode, you realize nothing has changed.
Yeah.
No. It's actually not the end. We just restarted number one.
Oh, God.
Wait, can I actually bring us back to fascism to close this pod?
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw a discussion of fascism on the internet in which someone dropped the meme, which you may have seen. It is a picture of Hitler, and it says everyone on the left thinks that everyone on the right are Nazis, which is not true. But let's just go with the meme. And then the next picture says. It's a picture of Stalin, and it says everyone on the right thinks that everyone on the left are communists. And then below is a picture of Brad Pitt from Fight Club saying, and I'm just sitting here looking at a country full of idiots falling for the divide and conquer thing. Now let me just.
Love internet memes.
People are like, "Oh my god, what a great meme! I'm going to use that." And I was just like, I was like, "Do I respond to this?" And I was like, "No, I'm not wasting."
No.
But here's the thing: Nazis and fucking Soviets, quote unquote communists. They were not the Soviets. Were both fascist. You dumb fucks.
Yes. That's because the right and the left, it looks like a spectrum on a line, but it's not.
It's not. It's the same fucking thing. Oh, God.
It's way too easy. It's Tyler.
This is
that meme that's low hanging fruit, man.
Yeah, you know? It's too easy. I had to pass it up. So just next time you're considering whether or not someone on the other side is doing something, ask yourself, is it fascism? And you may have to go look up what fascism means. So do that first.
Yes. And then look at your own political leanings in the mirror and ask yourself, are some of the things that I'm seeing in this other person, in their political belief system, similar to some of the things that I believe in? And you might be getting close to that same point.
Can we talk about that real quick in a funny way? So I have been going through and rewatching Game of Thrones now that I know the ending.
Hey, no spoilers. I don't even know the ending.
I think I can make this point spoiler free for the most part.
I'll just take my headphones out for a second. I'll just let you
sweet.
Guys talk. You
sweet,
just,
sweet, perfect.
Just do that.
Awesome. Yeah, do that. We'll wave our arms when we're ready. Spoiler alert, everybody. Spoiler alert. You have 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So I've been going back, and I think that Khaleesi's fall is actually more obvious in retrospect than it is when it's happening. And I now almost view Game of Thrones as like a cautionary tale about fascism because, like, I was rewatching the episode where she burns all those slavers and I'm like, fuck yeah. When it first happened, I was like, do it, burn those motherfuckers. And then having, you know, seen what happened, I'm like, oh, I guess this is frivolous, but also like I can fall prey to these things as well. And so we should all be like pretty aware of those things. And I think checking ourselves in even mundane ways, because we are all like susceptible to that tick of humanity.
That's a really good point. Can we bring Kelly back now?
Kelly!
Go back to us. That's a very good point though, John. And,
I hope he finishes the books too, and then I can, you know, join in the conversation. You know? all I gotta say is that I'm glad, I guess, that it's become such a global phenomenon. I wish more people listened to me when I told them to read the books, but you know, it's fine.
Kelly's not bitter at all.
Not bitter. Hashtag not bitter. Hashtag not bitter.
Hey man, not everybody's got the patience it takes to read a book these days, unfortunately.
Speaking of that, look at our book list.
It's hard.
Yeah, look at our book list.
On the interwebs.
On the interwebs. Check it out. And we may, in the near future, we will see at some point in the future, maybe near future, maybe far future, maybe neither because time's a flat circle. But at some point, we will have a tech talk. Not a TED talk.
I have a question.
A tech talk.
If time is a flat circle, does a future exist?
No. All points inside
all time.
Time
has been and will happen.
Yeah, everything
is existing at the same time.
Exactly, Kelly. Thank you.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
So
it's only our perception. It's only our perception in which. So it depends on what level you're talking about, John. If you talk about our perception, there's a past, there's a future. But if you're talking about ultimately, no, all of those things have already happened, and yeah, all possibilities, everything has already occurred.
So ultimately, we've already done the tech talk.
Ooh, it's a very
It's already
point.
Happened. It's already happened.
I wonder how it went, you guys.
I know.
It went great, just like all of our
listeners.
Pods.
Listeners, tell us how it went.
Yeah,
have you
from
guys
the future,
Slaughterhouse
but you got to come back.
Slaughterhouse 5.
By Kurt Vonnegut? There's a whole alien race that don't live through time. They live in the fifth dimension, which is a whole new way to think about space and time.
You ever tried to visualize higher dimensions? It's hard. It's hard.
There's some good
videos. It's actually physically impossible, I believe. That's why math is a thing. Hey, you guys, math. Most successful language in history. Huh?
Oh my god, we're not going back to that conversation. I'm really sad I missed it, but let's not get us started.
Thank you. I think on that note, we're going to wrap that up. Thanks for listening. This was just a short little sweet episode to jump back in and say hello to everybody. We will be back soon with some more fascinating conversations. Thank you everybody for joining us. Please give us a like, write us a review, send us a nice note, give us a critical thought. We like it all.
And go punch a Nazi in the face.
Godspeed, everybody.
Nice. So I just thought I'd end on that nice note.